This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, you're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan. Today is World Youth Skills Day and we're observing it by looking at how skills learning and TVET can be more inclusive. First, we discuss how young women's education and training has been impacted by the pandemic and where TVET might help. And then we look at how skills learning can accommodate the needs of people with disabilities. Tell us, how can our TVET programs be made more inclusive? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is just coming up to 6:08. And as I said, today is World Youth Skills Day. So this was announced by the UN General Assembly in 2014 with the aim of highlighting the necessity of equipping young people with skills for jobs and entrepreneurship. So it is meant to provide an opportunity for young people to meet and talk with technical and vocational education and training or TVET institutions, companies, employers, workers' organizations, policymakers and development partners, and in a larger sense also highlight the opportunities and the importance of a focus on TVET and skills learning. So this comes, I think, against a very interesting backdrop, because over the last 2.5 years, of course, we've seen multiple school and workplace closures, which then has had a knock-on effect on learning and training. And this has impacted young people's abilities to learn and then, of course, to go on and to have a career. So a lot of the focus on this year is about using skills learning and TVET as a way to bridge that gap and also to make the whole process more inclusive. So we're going to be looking at that from two very particular aspects. Firstly, we're going to be talking about how young women have been impacted over the course of the last 2 years, because many studies have been pointing this out. But if we just look at one, according to the International Labour Organization in its Global Employment Trends for Youth 2020 report, young women are twice as likely as men of the same age to be neither studying nor working. And this has only been exacerbated by the last 2 years. And so we're going to first focus on the opportunities for women within TVET here in Malaysia. Later on, we're going to be talking about people with disabilities and how skills-based learning can accommodate their needs and what opportunities lie in TVET as well as skills learning for people with disabilities. So those are the two large umbrellas that we're going to be discussing today, but we'd like to hear from you. How can our TVET programs be made more inclusive? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Aliza Alexander, founder of the White Lily Organisation and commissioner of the Girl Guides Association Malaysia. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:11. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and today we're marking World Youth Skills Day. And first, we're going to look at young women and how TVET programs can offer opportunities, and conversely, how we also need to make our programs more inclusive when it comes to accommodating women who choose to enter the field. And so we'd like to hear from you. How can our TVET programs be made more inclusive? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Aliza Alexander, founder of the White Lily Organisation and commissioner of the Girl Guides Association Malaysia. Aliza, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Sharmila. Thanks for having me here today.
What can you tell us about young women and TVET courses in Malaysia? How do take-up rates compare to young men?
At the moment, I got this topic from BFM, so I quickly did a Google survey and to search for what courses are there actually in Malaysia. And I think it's not a big surprise that most of the courses are literally male-dominated courses, mechanical, aeronautical, engineering. So, and as I scroll through, I think it's sad to see that most of the female-dominated courses are beautician, interior designing, and it's so limited. And the gap is huge, I would say, yeah.
So we are talking about this because global studies show that, because of delayed learning and training during the pandemic, young women are twice as likely to basically drop out of the system, to not be studying or not be working. What have you observed here in this regard?
Well, I am a school teacher and I work a lot with students. And I think it is true. Most of the students who are girls, they have opted out of schools. And this is, I would say, gender roles and stereotypes during the pandemic where girls or young women, they have been given this responsibility to take care of the household instead of focusing on studying, which was basically everything online. They channeled their energy more of caretaking for their siblings, for their parents, and taking care of their household. And they had no time to focus on their education because when it comes to face-to-face interaction, they are entirely in school, they are entirely in the institute to focus. But back home, they are bound to duties, to responsibilities, which is usually given to the girls instead of the boys. Yeah.
Are you seeing a change this year now that we've entered the endemic phase?
Well, honestly, I think it's too soon to say that. But it's sad to see that a lot of students, especially girls, have dropped out from schools because I would say that they were not participating during the online studies and they have gone way back, and catching up in school could be quite difficult. And due to that, lots of dropout rates have been happening within our system.
Recently, there's been a lot of focus on TVET, especially with the government allocating 36 million TVET scholarships for B40 students. What role can TVET play in fostering skills for young women?
Okay, so first, as I was mentioning, the courses which are more male-dominated. So I think TVET courses should be more diversified, giving opportunities to both genders. I personally love woodwork. I mean, it's not something female-oriented, but not all girls out there are in such mindset. So TVET courses should be more engaging for the girls and also to give confidence to them to move forward out of TVET. So once they have graduated, what is their pathway? So most girls usually would not go into TVET because there's no roadmap. They tend to have this fear that, what am I going to do next? Like, where am I going to get funding to continue? Because, once you learn sewing, for example, you need a premise where you could actually develop your business. So that's something TVET should include into their programs, perhaps. And also, make it more inclusive and more fun for girls.
Beyond the lack of choice, which you pointed out, what would you say are some other challenges that young women face when it comes to TVET?
Okay, not just girls, I would say. I think this is generically Malaysians have not come to this mindset that TVET is actually crucial. They would say TVET is a course for the underdogs or those who have, not performed academically well. So this should be a shift of mindset among people. Like in developed countries, for example, Australia, Germany, TVET courses are more recognized and it's given more value. So Malaysians are not there yet. People have not been seeing a value for their certificates or their recognition when it comes to TVET courses. So that's something that should be addressed in terms of the after of TVET courses. Yeah.
What would you like to see done to address some of these challenges?
Well, I think I would be saying the same thing again, like marketing. Marketing is the best thing to do these days, right? You have TikToks, you have social media. So promotion for TVET courses and giving guidance to this young youth that TVET courses would actually benefit them in the future. With today's world whereby service industry is booming, and TVET is actually the right pathway towards that. And I've been seeing like young girls on TikToks being masters of makeup. I mean, even I wouldn't know how to put on certain makeup, right? But they are such experts. And, you know, utilizing that to show them that the skills that they have could actually be beneficial for them in the future and to be entrepreneurs one day.
So I'd like to expand on that, actually. You know, what are some of the biggest areas of opportunity when it comes to TVET? I mean, in short, why should more young women consider TVET as an option?
So looking at today's generation, most of them are more in comfort of flexibility or working at their own pace. So TVET is the best thing, like in terms of skills, like they could build up their own businesses and they could actually work at their own pace. And that's the benefit of TVET, if you ask me, and it suits well with the current generation. Also that, again, the service industry is booming these days. People would want services. Like, for example, you know, like moving into a new house and you want to fix lights, no matter how academically profound you are, if you have no idea how to put the red and green and white wires around, there's no use for it, right? So the skill there is so crucial these days. Yeah.
And it is also often pointed out that many women contribute to the economy, but that it's through unpaid labor. Are there ways in which TVET might be able to bridge this gap?
Yeah. So firstly, the unpaid work is basically like things that we do at home, cooking, caring, gardening, childcare, right? And many homemakers tend to invest most of their time, and many young girls also invest their time in this. I mean, looking back how girls were more inclined to care for their young ones. And for TVET, perhaps the courses that they could design could be flexible in terms of time. That's one thing. And also maybe creating, in terms of flexibility, we can't change the whole society's mindset of gender roles, right? Like people tend to think that women have to provide care and men have to be the breadwinner. So changing the mindset is a whole different topic. But again, coming back to TVET, create flexible sessions for young girls to join, not using a rigid schedule or a timeline. And also using these unpaid labor skills, for example, childcare, into a TVET course so that they could utilize what they are doing and to gain certification for that as well.
Aliza, what's your message for World Youth Skills Day?
Well, this is TEAM, I believe, is transforming youth skills for the future. And this is inclined to employment and entrepreneurship. Again, skill, I think, with the combination of great skills, confidence and perseverance, I think that is the future for today's world. Again, going back to this simple example whereby, you know, if I have the knowledge of doing something, but if I don't have the skill, we wouldn't be seeing great artwork around. We wouldn't be seeing great, buildings around us. It's the skill that is making it into a reality from imagination. So to youth out there, don't be scared. I mean, utilize your skill, go after your dreams, and I'm sure that is your future.
Aliza, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Sharmila.
That was Aliza Alexander, founder of the White Lily Organization and commissioner of the Girl Guides Association Malaysia, weighing in on young women and how actually to create a more inclusive space for them when it comes to skills-based learning and TVET. Do keep your thoughts coming. How can we make TVET more inclusive here? You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this from Norman, which I think sets us up quite nicely for what we're going to be talking about after this. So Norman says, just want to let every Malaysian know there are only 4 Sekolah Menengah Vocational Pendidikan Khas for the whole Malaysia. Is there any other place for OKU community to acquire TVET courses? Where? You know, Norman, I think that's actually a great point to bring up. I don't know enough to answer, but I certainly think the simple answer to that would be not enough, because I don't think that there is even enough facilities or spaces for people with disabilities to acquire, to sort of integrate and have education within our larger education space, let alone TVET, right? And so, yes, I agree that a lot more effort needs to be made in this regard. After this, we are going to be talking about how the opportunities, but also the challenges that people with disabilities face when it comes to skills-based learning. And do keep your thoughts coming. You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we're marking World Youth Skills Day by talking about how skills-based learning and TVET can be made more inclusive. Earlier, we looked at young women. Now we're going to be talking about people with disabilities and how to accommodate their needs when it comes to the workplace, when it comes to TVET learning. But do keep your thoughts coming. How can we make TVET more inclusive here in Malaysia? You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, and if this name sounds familiar, that's because our next guest is actually my co-host, Lee Chui Lin, who's not here today. It's her sister. Speaking with us today is occupational therapist Lee Chui Ki. Welcome to the show, Chui Ki. Let's start by breaking down the different groups that we're talking about here. Firstly, for young people with physical disabilities, what are some of the key challenges they face when it comes to accessing skills learning and employment?
So I think, we're seeing more places work towards inclusivity and hiring more diversely. And I think with that, more spaces are also being set up with that accessibility in mind for physical disabilities. And I think that's a nice step in the right direction. So, I think often the biggest barriers to having access to skills learning and employment are still going to be maybe beliefs or preconceptions that we may have when hiring, like, oh, it's too hard, or oh, we're not set up for that, or you don't know how to do it. I think those are some of the things that people might still find challenging or a barrier when they're thinking about hiring. And with access to skills learning, sometimes I think families and individuals may still not be aware of what is available in terms of those opportunities.
So based on the experiences you've heard about, is there enough accommodation being made for these challenges, either at an educational level or when it comes to the workplace?
So I think speaking more to workplaces, I think a lot of them are more aware of some simple considerations that can be put in place to accommodate physical challenges. So I think, with physical disabilities, maybe it's been thought about for a long time and maybe they're more visible. So I think we're generally more comfortable with figuring out how to support it. And we're seeing more and more considerations going for that into design of public spaces and workplaces as well. So, for example, there are on the roads now, there are always more tactile paving and brails on elevator buttons for the visually impaired. And I think, more spaces are being thoughtful about making sure there's enough room and accessibility options for those in wheelchairs. And even, considering the heights of the buttons in an elevator. I think with schools, adding in infrastructure like that may be a little bit more difficult. And I think it takes a bit more creativity to think about how we can better accommodate physical challenges in schools.
And for young people with learning differences and neurodiversity, what are some of their needs when it comes to learning new skills?
So I think on us and, educators, I think it's important for us to understand perhaps, some of the strengths and challenges that they may have in general, including how maybe they process information differently, if they have different communication styles or preferences, and different learning styles as well. So I think some general practices that can be helpful are using clear, concise, and explicit instructions. So I know sometimes this can feel uncomfortable or it's not a natural speech pattern, but I think leaving information or instructions unambiguous can be very helpful. And going back to, you know, presenting information in different ways, I think we should be open to sharing the information in a variety of different ways. So maybe through more visuals instead of just verbal instructions, for example.
And how much of your work focuses on helping people pick up new skills that can be translated into independent living or employment?
So, you know, I think we do our best here, and generally I think in occupational therapy, to start from the foundation up. So understandably, a lot of the individuals we work with and the families that we work with want to see their children thrive in school and socially and generally be able to look after themselves. But I think something we do try to remind and reinforce is that being able to do this is actually an amalgamation of many different skills, and the ability to use these skills flexibly, independently, and efficiently. So having said that, I think overall, like it's an overarching thing, we try to teach underlying skills that can be, so we work with our clients, and this includes self-regulation and awareness to how you're feeling, being able to plan and be organized, you know, being able to problem solve and think flexibly, as well as manage unexpected outcomes and the emotions that come with those. And through all this, to be able to communicate effectively to the best of their abilities. And, you know, I think these are soft skills that underpin successful independent living and employment.
And considering that you work with people of a fairly wide age range, from early childhood all the way to adulthood, at what point does this become a priority or part of the conversation, either with your client or with their parents?
So I think in my personal preference, I try to talk about independent skills as early as possible with parents and with the client as well, bearing in mind that independence does look different at different ages. So I think doing this maybe kind of sets the tone or gets the families and the client in the frame of mind to try new things for themselves, for the kids to be able to try new things for themselves and to experience success or otherwise in a safe space. Generally, I think the bigger topic of employment may come up more around adolescent years, both with the client and with the families. And during these years, you know, when personalities, preferences, and strengths start to become a little bit more concrete, we might need to start working with our clients to think a little bit more about future pathways and what foundations we need to set up or strengthen in the pursuit of these goals.
We are speaking with Lee Chweki, who is an occupational therapist, on how to make learning and workplaces more inclusive when it comes to people with disabilities. Do keep sending your thoughts through. How can we make TVET more inclusive? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our conversation with Chweki after this, so keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:46. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and today we are marking World Youth Skills Day. We are now talking about how to make TVET and skills-based learning more inclusive when it comes to people with disabilities, and we're joined by occupational therapist Lee Chweki. Chweki, picking up on our conversation, do our current classroom settings offer enough support for people who are differently abled, either physically or mentally?
So with those who are differently abled physically, I'm actually not too sure what the classroom or school setup is like currently in general. But if I think back to when I was in school, there were not too many accommodations that were made, and I certainly hope it's developed since then. I was speaking with a friend, though, who mentioned that in her school, there was a student who was wheelchair bound, and one of the accommodations that was made was that their classroom was always on the ground floor for the entire time that he was in school, which, you know, I think things like that are nice and simple solutions that I hope that other schools have planned for such accommodations as well. For those with different learning abilities, from my experience and what I have observed working in this field for the last few years, I do feel like teachers and schools are more open to making different arrangements in the classroom to enable differently abled students to access education more readily. So I think something we've seen more of as well is that we do get approached by schools and teachers asking us how they may better support their students who learn differently. And sometimes it can be individual teachers asking for specific students, and sometimes they're asking for more general teacher training so that more of the staff are aware and equipped to support differently abled learners.
So then talk us through what an ideal skill learning setup could look like for someone with a learning difference or someone who's neurodiverse. What would need to be prepared? Who needs to be involved?
So I think it's quite hard to generalize that, just because I think it would look different at different ages, and also it would look different for those with different capacities. But I think something that is important to bear in mind is that all the stakeholders who are working with that individual, maybe it's family members or caregivers, educators or therapists, you know, I think it would be nice if they could all be on the same page and supportive of the same goals and strategies. I think something else that would be important is to gauge from the individual, if possible, what they find important or what or where they think their strengths lie, and to be able to use that information to, you know, carry forward with their skills learning. I think that's very valuable information. And I think being, again, flexible in how we teach or share these skills and how we get these information across clearly would be important. So I think that, again, will look different for different individuals. But I think being open-minded to trying new things and having a framework that we can depend on, I think, would be helpful.
And how can workplaces be made more inclusive or ready for people who are differently abled? What would be a good place to start?
So I think having a framework or an idea for what that support will look like before hiring is probably quite helpful. You know, having this framework can help provide an overview of not only the process, but also the areas along the process that may be tweaked or for which we can manage our own expectations. Some simple things, for example, even can be like making sure that the role descriptions in our advertisements when we're recruiting is very clear, being open to conducting the interviews online versus face-to-face, maybe even allowing for alternative methods of responses for those who may have difficulties or anxieties around verbal expression. And even, you know, for ourselves, setting our own expectations that certain expected habits like making eye contact and things like that may not indicate rudeness or a lack of interest. Alongside that, I think, you know, if workplaces can be open to maybe making more considerations of where we can deviate from the norm, so maybe being more flexible with accommodations, taking into account the individual's strengths, so maybe how they manage their communication with co-workers can be discussed, whether or not they work more independently versus working with a team, or maybe even allowing for more work from home opportunities. I think alongside this, education or training for the current employees to understand neurodiversity or different abilities may be helpful so that they can recognize that some of the challenges that may arise or some differences that they may perceive may be due to the different ways that their colleagues' brains may work or process information rather than it being a challenging personality, for example. And I think physically, in terms of setting up a space, taking into consideration things that may provide a sensory experience, for example, lighting and sound, whether or not there's a quiet space to work in and things like that can be helpful.
And there can be a lot of emotional anxiety attached to learning, right? Especially when you learn or process differently. What strategies or advice would you like to offer in this regard?
I think something that we do try to highlight with our clients, because I think we do get this response quite often, is that we do try to highlight that we all have strengths and challenges, and trying to reinforce that the inability or finding it challenging to excel or pick up information that others may seem to be able to is not an indicator of your value as a person. So I think, you know, being aware and understanding how the individual learns best is very helpful for themselves. And I think if they know that information, they may even be able to provide that insight into teachers, co-workers, or managers who may then use that method to provide and share information with them as well. And I think trying to remember what their strengths are can be helpful, or where they're doing well in, or reminding themselves of things that they are capable of is always very helpful. And I think importantly, and this is important for all of us as well, I think knowing our supports and outlets can be very helpful too.
Now, we've talked a lot across the station about TVET and its role in education and the country's future as a whole. What can be done to make TVET programs specifically more inclusive for people with disabilities or learning differences?
I think similarly, looking at how the curriculum may be more flexible in how it's taught can be helpful, and being open to considering alternative teaching methods can be useful. Alongside this, I think it's possible to allow for different forms of evaluations might be a good thing to consider. Just understanding that traditional exams and evaluations may not be the best showcase of one's actual abilities and skills.
And one of the main advantages of learning skills through TVET is work-based learning, right? So is this potentially a particularly good way for someone with learning differences to pick up skills?
So where I think this is particularly helpful is that being hands-on and doing, you're providing the individual with information and skills that they can immediately apply in context, rather than teaching a skill in a theoretical or abstract way that they later have to transfer to a practical outcome. So that transfer of skills and that use of skills can be quite challenging for some. And in any case, providing skills in context and in a hands-on practical way provides a nice multi-sensory approach that can be very helpful in consolidating understanding.
And is there an openness to learning TVET skills among the people that you work with and their families?
In my experience, I think the clients that I work with might be more open to these TVET skills than maybe families might be. And I understand that it can be a somewhat delicate topic. But I think a lot of this comes down to just what we know, what we're familiar with. You know, more traditional pathways and the dreams that families often have for their children is to have more comfortable lives and jobs than what they, the parents, have. I think it's something that not a lot of parents naturally consider as the first option. Having said that, I do hope it's something that more families start to consider as well, as there are many valuable skills that can be learned through TVET programs. And I think many individuals, differently able or not, may find it difficult to make it through, you know, a bachelor's program or a diploma. And TVET may provide a more fulfilling pathway.
So therapy and getting specialized help can actually be quite an expensive thing. What can be done in order to increase accessibility to things like occupational therapy?
So I think that's definitely something that we've thought about quite a lot, because, you know, with therapy, it's an ongoing process, and it's something that we do prepare families for being a long-term thing. So I understand costs can really add up, and reducing costs in this case can really be difficult. But something that we do try and do is get families or their other supports, be it teachers or other family members, involved in the sessions and getting familiar with our approaches, and so that this can be helpful to ensure carryover at home, even if sessions are not that frequent or access to therapy is not so readily available.
Tweaky, what would you like to leave us with?
I think something that I've been considering a lot lately is the idea that, you know, someone's happiness can come in different forms. So some of it may be more fleeting, you know, like joy or delight. But there's another form of happiness that is more subtle, but perhaps longer lasting, which is satisfaction and fulfillment, right? So I think, you know, with the families that I work with, especially with the younger ones, the skills that we try to impart or the pathways that we try to get them on, they may line up more with what parents or us as therapists or teachers may value. But of course, as they grow and develop, they may find that they are more inclined to certain things, or they may find out more about what they value and what brings them meaning. And I think that when they express these things, that we should recognize and validate these strengths and preferences, the skills that they have or want to develop and the path that they want to take may not necessarily be what we imagine for them. But, you know, if it brings someone fulfillment, why not try to join them in finding the roles that best fit their values and support them in pursuing them.
Tweaky, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Lee Tweaky, occupational therapist, weighing in and helping us understand how to make learning skills more inclusive, and where TVET can come into that for people with disabilities. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. How can our TVET programs be made more inclusive? We're talking about this because today is World Youth Skills Day. So send your thoughts through. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.